Good morning to everybody. My prayer this morning is that God's blessing rests on each of you. Let's see here. Several of y'all mentioned y'all are praying for me. I got several messages throughout the week and several this morning. Thank y'all for that. I don't think y'all know how much that means to me. And don't stop now. I still need it. I didn't know what to title the message this morning. It could be a bunch of different things. And I don't really know why I'm thinking about this right now, but the last while I've been thinking about legacy and what our legacy is going to be after we die. So I guess you could title it Legacy and what will yours be? What do you think of when you think of legacy? Some people think of leaving a bunch of money for their children. Some people think about possessions, or they want to be known for something after they die. And the more I studied legacy and what we're going to leave for our children, the more I realized it had really doesn't have anything to do with money. It doesn't have anything to do with possessions in long term. So what is legacy? And I want us to think about this not in a egotistical way of, I sure hope somebody says something good after I die. Don't think about it to make us look good in man's eyes. Let's try to look at it how we left what we could to make the life for the ones we left behind us as good as we could. Before I had a child of my own, I really didn't grasp the thing of legacy. But after we had Bentley, it hit me that I have this little boy. He has my last name. And one of these days I won't be here, and he more than likely will. And what I leave with him is going to impact future generations. There is several years there where we didn't have children, and I didn't know if this branch of the Gingrich tree was going to have a fork in it. Now we have one fork, and now it's going to have two, it sounds like. And I'm responsible for that legacy and what I teach him. Nothing makes a man grow up and think quite as seriously about life as having a child. I discovered that when I was a youth boy, I didn't think about it much, about leaving a legacy, but something happens when you have a child of your own that makes you grow up, and it makes you take stock of where you're in life and where you're going. It's the way God designed it, and it's a good thing. Children are a tremendous blessing. I think somebody could do a whole series on the blessings of children for a whole week long. Sometimes they seem like trouble. Sometimes they tear up stuff. Sometimes you're like, wow. Sometimes I get up from the table after eating supper with my wife and boy, and I look at my little boy's high chair, and I look at the floor, and I tell my wife, get Tony over here with rapid response, because there ain't no way we're going to clean this up on our own. It's a disaster. But even when they tear up stuff like that or make a mess or it feels like they destroy the house, they're still a blessing. And life would be hard to imagine without a child. Now, we've all heard stories, or we've heard preachers say, the dash between the dates. The date on your tombstone, the beginning and the end. We've all heard that before, but I want to talk about that dash this morning, the dash between the dates. And when that dash is done, our legacy is over, and it's sealed forever. And what we did in that dash will depend on where we spend eternity, and it will depend on our legacy that we leave behind. There will come a day, and it's hard to imagine because we're all still alive, but there will come a day the only thing we're going to need is a 3x7 wood box and a hole in the ground. And we ain't Buddhist. We ain't going to come back. And it's going to be sealed forever. Now, I have a little bit of an object lesson. It's kind of crude, but we're going to do it anyway. So the average age today in America is 78.6, is the average death age. Now, I'm not going to try to make anybody die sooner than they need to or anything like that. I'm not saying you're going to make it till your 80s. I'm just saying that statistically, what the statistics say. And actually, if you're in your 60s and you're in good health, you have a good chance of making it to 90, because that age 78.6 counts in for infant death and teenage death. So I'm not saying everybody's going to make it to 80. I'm just saying this to give us a baseline. So let's say 1 year equals an inch. We'll move this to 80 inches right there. So let's say that's your life. Now, where are you at in life by your age? Some of us are back here at 10. I wind up right around 30 here, so I have from here to here, 50 years, maybe. Some of you are 40, maybe you're halfway through. Some are maybe over at 60, and you have 20 left. I'm not saying you have 20. Nobody has the promise of tomorrow. I could pull out on the road here leaving and get hit by the school bus. We all know that. But this is just an average to give you an idea. So where are you at? And with the time you have left, what are you going to do with it? Because what you do, if you look back over your life at where you've been and you see it's not what you wanted, you have from there till there to change it. Does that make sense? Whoever heard, who knows what the word YOLO means? Who wants to tell me what that means? Go ahead, Ryan. You only live once. Now, usually, when people use that word today, YOLO, it means get out of the car because they're fixing to do something stupid. But you can actually, that's actually not a bad thing to think about. YOLO, you only live once. Most people use it in the wrong context. It's usually a young person fixing to do something stupid. But we only get one shot at this life. It's true. And I'm not saying we need to go do crazy things and put our life at risk, but we do need to think about it. We only live once. And most people here today are on the younger side of life. We think we have forever, or it feels like it. Death is the one thing we think it's the one thing nobody wants to think about much because, well, let me read what I wrote here. It's been said all humans know that they're going to die, but they all push it to the back of their heads and think it's always going to be somebody else dying because so far it always has been. It's not something we really want to think about. We want to think we're invincible and we're going to live forever, but we're not. It's just not the way it is. And every one of us, man, woman, and even children to a certain extent, will leave a legacy, and what's it going to be? Some people's legacy, we think of famous people in the Bible. There's people like that we've heard about ever since we're children. Adam, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, the 12 disciples, Paul in Acts there. We have lots of writings about these people, and their legacy lives on today, and it probably will for the rest of time. We have more modern day people like George Washington, first president, Abe Lincoln, Rockefeller, Henry Ford, people that left a terrible legacy like Hitler. We have Bonnie and Clyde, outlaws. You could name all these people, and they left a legacy, and it wasn't all good, and some of it was good. And this morning, we're going to look at two people in the Bible that left a legacy. And both people had money. Both people liked, I don't know, they both had, one had a really good understanding of money, and the other one didn't. Y'all may know who I'm talking about, but let's turn to Job. We're going to read a little bit about Job this morning. Job It's a little more reading than I like to do up here, but I'm going to read chapter 1 down through 2, verse 10. Now there was in the land of Uz a man whose name was Job, and that man was perfect and upright, and one that feared God and eschewed evil. And there was born unto him 7 sons and 3 daughters. His substance also was 7,000 sheep and 3,000 camels and 500 yoke of oxen and 500 she-asses and a very great household, so that this man was the greatest of all the men of the east. And his sons went and feasted in their houses, every one his day, and sent and called for their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. And it was so, when the days of their feasting were gone about, that Job sent and sanctified them, and rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number for all of them, for them all. And for Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their heart." Thus did Job continually. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, "Whence comest thou?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, and one that feareth God and escheweth evil?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast thou not made a hedge about him, and about his house, and about all that he hath on every side? And thou hast blessed the work of his hand, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thy hand now, and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Behold, all that he hath is in thy power, and only upon himself put not forth thine hand." So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord. And there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house. And there came a messenger unto Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the asses feeding beside them, and the Sabines fell upon them and took them away. Yea, they have slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped to tell thee." While he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, "The fire of God has fallen from heaven and hath burned the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I only am escaped to tell thee." And while he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, "The Chaldeans made out 3 bands and fell upon the camels and carried them away, yea, and slain the servants with the edge of the sword, and I only am escaped to tell thee." And while he was yet speaking, there came also another and said, "Thy sons and thy daughters were eating and drinking wine in their eldest brother's house, and behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the 4 corners of the house and fell upon the young men, and all they are dead, and I only am escaped alone to tell thee." Then Job rose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and worshipped and said, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. And there was a day when the Son of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also among them to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said to Satan, "From whence comest thou?" And Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, and one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause?" And Satan answered the Lord and said, "Skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thy hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Behold, he is in thy hand, but save his life." So Satan went forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot even unto his crown. And he took him a potsherd to scrape himself withal and sat down among the ashes. Then said his wife unto him, "Dost thou still refrain thine integrity? Curse God and die." But he said unto her, "Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What shall we receive? What shall we receive good at the hand of God, and not shall not we receive evil?" In all this did not Job sin with his lips. We all know that story. We've all read that story before, I'm sure. But you talk about trial and heartaches that Job went through. Now, he was obviously a very wealthy and apparently a very wise man. He was a good farmer. a super farmer, he had 11,000 animals at names there. So I don't know how many animals, how many acres it takes for one animal. Some people say 2 acres per animal. Probably depends where you're at. I don't know what the land was like around Job, but if it took 2 acres per animal, that means he had at least 22,000 acres. He was known in that land for being a good farmer and an upright person. If you dealt with him, you didn't get gypped. You didn't get ripped off. Verse 5, he was a great dad with a burden for his children. Now let's go over to verse 15. This start is the start of Satan's trial for him. So Terah steal his tractor fleet, basically, his oxes and his asses. All his equipment gone, just like that. And then lightning struck his freezers of meat and burned all his clothes. It took his sheep. I guess that's what he used sheep for. We're going to assume that. Then more terrorists come, and they steal his railroad and main means of transportation. They took all his camels. And then 18 and 19, the worst thing that could happen, all your children are killed at one time. And verse, let's see, chapter 2, verse 10, in all this did not Job sin with his lips. The other place it says, or charge God foolishly. I think it said that. Can't lay my eye on it right now. How did Job maintain his sanity? Everything he worked his whole life for is gone just in the blink of an eye. His whole world was crushed in one day, it would seem like. I don't know how long Job lived in sackcloth and ashes. I don't think the Bible tells us anyway. And I was doing some research, and some people thought it might have been up to 48 years. Now, I don't know if that's true. I personally have trouble. I always thought it was maybe several months that he lived like that, but I don't know. Maybe it was 48 years. That's an incredibly long time. Maybe that's why Job is known for patience and his legacy. It'd be kind of like watching Amazon crash right now, and we find out Jeff Bezos is living in Africa in the slums. What would we think? But we know Job wasn't tried like this because of any sin in his life. It was just God allowing Satan to do what Satan was going to do, what Satan wanted to do. We know how Job's story turned out. I'll read a little bit way back at the end of Job. Job 42. We know God returned everything double. See, 42:10 through 17, I'll read that quickly. And the Lord turned the captivity of Job when he prayed for his friends. Also, the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. Then came there unto him all his brethren and all his sisters and all that had been his acquaintance before, and did eat bread with him in his house, and bemoaned him and comforted him over the evil that the Lord had brought upon him. Every man also gave him a piece of money and one earring of gold. So the Lord blessed the latter end of Job more than his beginning, for he had 14,000 sheep, 6,000 camels, 1,000 yoke of oxen, and 1,000 she-asses. And he also had 7 sons and 3 daughters. And he called the name of the first Jemiah, and the name of the second Keziah, and the name of the third Kershnap. I don't know what that word is. And all the land, there was no women found so fair as the daughters of Job, and their father gave them an inheritance among their brethren. After this lived Job 140 years, and saw his sons and his sons' sons, even 4 generations. So Job died being old and full of days. So we know how that story turned out. We know God blessed him for his patience. Just a side note, it's kind of interesting. Job's three daughters are named in there and his sons aren't. I don't know why that is. And he gave them an inheritance among their brothers, which was kind of unusual in that day. But anyway, that's kind of an interesting thought. And I don't know why. All right. This is a really open-ended question, but who has maybe the worst legacy you can think of in the Bible? I'm just curious what comes to your mind. Who did about the worst thing you could ever do? Judas Iscariot. That's right, Judas Iscariot. What was Judas's problem? What did he love?
Money.
Judas had a love for money. So what, in your mind, is Judas's legacy today? What, when you think of Judas Iscariot, what's one of the first words that describe him? And there could be several. I'm not saying it has to be the one I have, but it's the first one that came to my mind.
Selfish.
Selfish. What was that?
Greed.
Traitor. That's what I was looking for. Traitor. What an awful legacy. He was a disciple who made a commitment to follow Jesus, and he had a firsthand view of what living a successful Christian life looked like. He's seen Jesus preaching, teaching. He's seen him healing. He's seen everything firsthand. But he had a problem. He had a sticky finger problem. So Jesus and his group of disciples lived off of donations from people. Basically, you would find that in Luke 8:3. And they had a money bag, and Judas took care of the money bag. Now Jesus knew that Judas had a money problem. Why would Jesus leave a man that had sticky fingers with a money problem in charge of the money bag? Why would he do that? After all, aren't we supposed to cut our hand off or pluck our eye out if it offends us? But here he hands the guy that has the money problem the money bag. He was known as a thief amongst the disciples. John 12, verse 6 says, this he said, this was after the, maybe I'll back up. Well, this was about the ointment that Mary had. John 12:6, this he said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief, and he had a bag, and bare that which was put therein. And that would mean he had a problem of scarfing out of the bag. So I don't know why Jesus put him in charge of the money bag. I'd be interested in hearing y'all's thoughts. Just some things that came to my mind. Was it I lost it. I'll come back to that later. But so Judas was, maybe you could consider him almost the deacon of the group. You know what I mean? That's kind of a scary thought. He was the guy that when they walked through the village, he'd duck into the little store by himself, pull money out of the bag, and he'd buy his Coke and his Snickers bar. And the disciples would go, look, he just took our last bit of money and he bought himself a snack. And Judas would just kind of grin and wipe the chocolate off the side of his mouth. And Jesus would look at him and kind of shake his head, and Judas might have felt a little guilty, but he didn't feel guilty enough to quit doing it. Now, that's a made-up story in my mind. I don't know if that actually happened. I'm sure, I don't think they had Coke back in those days, but you get the point. So why did Jesus put him in charge of the money bag? Maybe it was because he was trying to keep giving him a chance. Maybe he was trying to tell us that even if you know people are going to rip us off, try trusting them anyway. Maybe he was trying to show us he wasn't worried about tomorrow. I don't know why. So now let's look at Luke 22, 1 through 6. You don't have to turn to it if you don't want to. It's when, just read it real quick. This was when Judas betrayed Jesus. Now the feast of unleavened bread drew nigh, which is called the Passover, and the chief priests and scribes sought how they might kill him, for they feared the people. And Satan entered into a Judas, surnamed Iscariot, being of the number of 12. And he went his way and communed with the chief priests and captains how he might betray him unto them. And they were glad and coveted to give him money. And he promised and sought opportunity to betray them in the absence of the multitude. That right there is where Judas sold his soul for money. For a 30 miserly pieces of silver. There's a lot of, I was trying to figure out exactly how much 30 pieces of silver is worth. It's hard to know. There's so many different thoughts on it. Some people think it was worth anywhere from $215 to $600. Some people say 30 pieces of silver was worth 5 weeks' wage. So if we want to do that math, the average household income in America today is right around $59,000. Take that divided by four, comes to about $1,092 a week, and times five, so we would have, at the most, this was worth about $5,460. So it sure wasn't like a Bernie Madoff. It wasn't like he was making, it was that much money. I mean, $5,000 is a nice chunk of money. If you hand it to me, I'll take it. But it wasn't like he was making millions of dollars here. But what a terrible legacy to sell out your Lord and your Savior, a man you followed for so long, for such a miserly amount. And apparently he still had a little bit of a conscience, because after he realized what a terrible thing he did, he felt bad enough that he hung himself. And when he hung himself, his legacy was forever sealed. He could have went back and made it right. He could have put his trust in Jesus. He could have been forgiven. He had the opportunity. But after he killed himself, he sealed his legacy forever as a traitor, and that's what he will always be known as. So what are people going to say about our legacy after we die? Are they going to say, he really tried his best, even with the faults that he had, to do the best he could, and he followed his Lord and Savior to the absolute best of his abilities? Will they say, in good times and bad times, we were like Job and blessed God and refused to back down on God's principles? Will they say we took good care of our wife and children to the best of our abilities? Will they say we were honest, or will they say we scarfed out of the bag when we thought others weren't watching? Will they say money or possessions was our main focus in life? Will they say Jason was awful good at looking out for number one, and number one being himself? Will they say we took better care of our neighbors than we did ourselves? Aaron touched on that in devotions. Love your neighbor more than yourself. Will we leave that kind of a legacy? Will they say he sure was good at keeping his phone in his hand, and he never seen his children grow up, but he sure knew what was up with the news or the latest gossip? That hits pretty close home for me. Phones are so addictive. And to our argument, we do a lot of things on our phones. We do a lot more than we used to. It used to be you just called, then you text. Now we do everything on our phone. My schedule's on my phone, my calendar, email. We do a lot of things on our phone. But I do a lot more on my phone than I need to. Sometimes I need to just put it down and spend time with the children. Sometimes you need to just take your cup of coffee or your tea to the front porch with your wife and your boy and just sit there for a little bit and watch the world go by and leave the phone in the house. And that's straight to me. I'll admit that's a weakness I have. Always having to have my phone in arm's reach. All right, let's go on here. So today, we're still in the land of the living, as my mother-in-law likes to say. Sometimes when we're up there for the weekend or something, we'll sleep in late Saturday morning. We'll finally come dragging down the steps, and she goes, "Oh, you are still in the land of the living." But we are still in the land of the living this morning. We have a chance to change our legacy and make it a better life for us and for the world around us. We still have that opportunity. There's lots of people today that are in eternity that just would long for the opportunity to have to sit right where you are and change their legacy, but they can't. And like I said at the beginning, it's possible to do all these good things for the wrong reason. But I don't think you could do it a whole lifetime on your own power. It takes God's strength to help you, to help me. So what are we going to do? Are we going to strive to do the very best we can with the abilities God gave us and make the world just a little bit of a better place after we die? Or are we going to live a life where it sure looks fun to take care of number one? It looks fun to take care of myself and get what I can. Or are we going to live it like Jesus and do the best we can to help our fellow brethren? That's all I have this morning. And it was good for me to study this because there's a lot of areas I need to grow in this. And I know that one day it's going to be sealed and I'm going to be done. I'm going to lie in the grave, and I'm going to look back and be glad at what I did. With those thoughts, why don't we, let's kneel for prayer.